Welcome to Steppin' Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms not only within the system, but within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon. Hi, everybody. My name is Sue Supriano, and I'm really happy to be talking today with the filmmaker, Stephanie Black. And she is a producer and director of a brand new documentary film called Life and Debt. It's about Jamaica. I just saw it yesterday. It's really great. I got to tell you, Stephanie, that I made a radio documentary on Jamaica in the early 80s, and the issues, of course, are the same issues, only now it's called globalization. Some of us call it corporate globalization, but really things have just gotten worse, and I wasn't surprised about that. I'm really glad that you're letting people know about this. What led you to do this film?
Well, I spent time in Jamaica in the early 90s, and I was struck by how naive and how little I knew about the IMF and how much everyone else in Jamaica knew about the IMF and the World Bank, because they were living under structural adjustment policies. And so every day I would read the newspaper, and there'd be another article in the Gleaner about how a tranche of payment that was supposed to be due to Jamaica was not going to be released because Jamaica had not privatized quickly enough, or they had not devalued their dollar to the satisfaction of what the IMF had set forth. And every day these articles would reappear, and I was really, really struck by how little I knew and how I had thought that the IMF was something like a benevolent Red Cross, and they lent money and helped, you know, allowed third world developing countries to kind of build schools and hospitals. And in fact, it was quite the opposite. And so that was actually the catalyst of the making of the film. It was that kind of awareness of how unaware I was, and that's actually how the film almost follows the structure of how I came into it, including the news media, you know, and actually even including the tourists, which were a kind of metaphor for myself. And in that, you know, the tourists in the film, you know, they may not know what's going on beyond the boundaries of the hotel gates, and more importantly, as a metaphor for Americans who do not know what is happening outside the boundaries of our country, yet in our name, because although we don't live under a structural adjustment policy, we don't borrow from the IMF, we have the strongest voting power in the IMF, and so these policies are being implemented in the name of the United States and thus Americans ourselves.
Yeah, I was really happy to see that you did it in that way from the point, I mean, not from juxtaposing, actually, the way a lot of people live and their brilliance. I mean, of a lot of the poor people being so, Jamaicans being so articulate and so knowledgeable about the political dynamics, which you wouldn't be so likely to find in the United States, I don't think. I know that when I was making a documentary, and I've made several documentaries in the Caribbean, it's so amazing to hear people talk so brilliantly about these international and national, for them, dynamics. And like you say, they're living it. But of course, a lot of people in the United States are being really affected by these similar kinds of dynamics, and they don't even realize it. So I thought your film, Life and Debt, just captured that really well. And Jamaica is a place where so many Americans go, and like so many places. So I think it's just wonderful that you did it in that way. You produced another film, H2 Worker, about migrant workers, Jamaican workers in Florida. I think I saw that film, and because I saw a film, and it must have been that same one that was, it was just an amazing film also that really uncovered a lot of stuff that I, who am pretty well informed about these things, wasn't aware of. So I guess you're not new to these issues of poverty creating policies.
Thank you. What you mentioned before, you know, it was interesting when we were going to, when I was going to do the interviews, and you mentioned the parallel of the trends happening in the United States. The farmers were so happy to have the opportunity to speak to someone who would allow their voice to reach the American people, because the farmers themselves in Jamaica identify with the small farmers in the United States, and they know that they're in similar positions where large farms and agribusiness is eradicating all locality. Very often when you make a documentary, sometimes you have to twist people's arm into participating a little bit and talk them into it. And there was no talking. It was almost as if the people were expecting me before I got there, because it was also a very acute understanding that these policies, though coming largely from the states, the United States, were not coming from the American people. And so, and that, and they wanted very much to have this opportunity to dialogue with the American people, because so they too would know the impact that they're having.
Well, Stephanie Black, as is so often the case, of course, most people's voices are left out of the media, as I'm sure we both know, and probably listeners know also. That's why we're doing films like this and radio shows like this, and so that's great, as far as I'm concerned, that you did that. And I can imagine that people are glad to be heard, because they're mostly not heard. I wonder that we should talk probably a little bit about the policies that we are referring to. I know all about structural adjustment, because in the IMF and the World Bank and corporate globalization, because these, in the media really, because over and over and over and over again, when we talk about what's happening in the world and what's happening to people, we come back to these same themes. But maybe it would be good if you would explain, you know, kind of do a little synopsis about, and maybe with some of the, you have in the film Life and Debt, there are particular issues that are covered, like bananas, sweatshops, basically sewing for these big companies like Tommy Hilfiger. So it, choose anything that you want to talk about, and let's tell the audience.
This is very interesting, actually. What the IMF does is, a country will go to the IMF and say they need to borrow some money. So the IMF will send a team down to the country to assess what's happening there. And then they will tell the country to ask, it's a letter of intent, to ask for a loan from the IMF stating what they will do with this money. But the IMF tells them that they will devalue, you must devalue, you must privatize and such. So it's almost like they make their borrowing nation put it in the loan agreement as if it's coming from themselves. And then they'll submit this letter of intent, and then the IMF will tweak it a little bit, and then they'll sign off of it and they'll give it. And basically the same prescriptions for every country that borrows from the IMF are imposed. So it's not so easy to compare the history of an East European country with the history of a country like Jamaica that's been colonized for nearly four centuries. But yet the IMF, in integrating these countries into the global economy, is what they call it, to do that successfully, according to the IMF, there are certain structural adjustment reforms that are required. And these are, for example, the devaluation of the dollar. So Jamaica was required to make their dollar worth less up against the U.S. dollar. And the argument behind this from the IMF is that this will discourage imports, because now they will have to spend more Jamaican dollars to get to buy foreign goods. Well, when you have a country that's been developed as a colony for the benefit of a foreign entity like England, and has been so dependent on exploiting its resources and importing its what it needs for consumption, devaluing the dollar isn't going to inhibit imports. All that's going to happen is they're going to have to pay more for it. And so that has not worked. And then
the people get poorer and poorer.
Exactly.
And more and more desperate,
right,
which leads to violence and just all the things that poverty leads to, and desperation.
Especially too, because while the dollar is devalued, the minimum wage is not increased. So then actually the working wage becomes lower and lower.
If you would talk a little bit about the sewing in the free trade zone, as it called, because those exist in other countries too. And I've heard about it, but this is the first I've actually seen pictures, as I just did in your film Life and Debt.
The free trade zones were developed under the Reagan administration as part of the Caribbean Basin Initiative. And the idea behind that was during the Reagan era, Siaga had borrowed so much money from the IMF, and they were so under the hold of the IMF and the World Bank. This was like a kind of gift, in effect. We're going to help unemployment in the Caribbean to build. What would happen is that they would lend money, the World Bank would lend money to a country like Jamaica to build what's called free zone areas, which would be factories where foreign companies like in the U.S., Hanes or Made in Form or Tommy Hilfiger or Brooks Brothers, can send down their pre-cut fabric and their thread, because they're not allowed to use any materials from the country, because our textile lobby is so powerful here that, God forbid, we should lose any jobs and such like that. So they send down this pre-cut fabric and pay the women to sew them abominable wages and under very, very strict, stressful working conditions. And then the goods are shipped back here. And it's called the free trade zone because it's like a tax-free, no man's land. You know, it's not under the full jurisdiction of the Jamaican government. The normal labor laws that would normally operate in Jamaica don't operate in the free trade zone. The sad part in Jamaica right now is that although the working conditions are deplorable, that is not the issue. The issue at hand is that these countries, after Jamaica borrows money to build the factories, at a moment's notice, the companies just can pick up and leave and go to the Dominican Republic or another country where they can pay lower wages. And so there's a kind of vulnerability in this kind of development that has no real sustenance or really any kind of real foundation for the country.
Yeah, in the film, women were talking about having worked there for so long and having been laid off, just boom, and they're just like hundreds of sewing machines and people squidged in all together. And as I say, I've heard about it. This is the first time I've seen pictures of sweatshops, basically, which is what it is. Yeah, and so people should know, just like the tourists should know, we should know that's what's happening when we buy these so popular brands. Let's see, what else was it? Like bananas. You want to talk about the banana issue a little bit, Stephanie Black?
Sure. The banana industry is interesting. That was an example of the WTO and the World Trade Organization. The kind of ideology that the IMF and the World Bank put forth is followed up very systematically by the WTO, and these ideas of free trade and kind of open markets and even playing ground field between nations. The ACP, which is the Afro-Caribbean Pacific countries that were colonized by European nations, the ones that had produced bananas for the European nations, when they became independent, it was decided by England and the European nations that they would not be penalized for their independence. So where they had been taking the bananas from the countries, they would continue to take the bananas and they would not put a tariff on it the way they might put a tariff on goods. They would still treat it as almost as if it was coming from they themselves, England. And so this tariff, this was called the Lomé Agreement, and this was a way to allow the colonized countries, when they got independence, to kind of gain a footing for themselves and not to have to produce bananas at a cheaper rate than they had been producing them all these years for England themselves. Clinton, under pressure from Chiquita and Dole, went to the WTO and said that this preferential treatment, the lack of a tax that was being imposed, was against the WTO and had to be eliminated. Now, mind you, Chiquita and Dole already control 95% of the world's banana production, so they're talking about a very small percentage. And the land and the topography and economies of scale that are in South and Central America, where these multinationals produce bananas, cannot be compared with what the topography and the small farms of Jamaica banana production. So it would be impossible for them to produce as cheap a banana as Latin America. So if a tariff is to be added on that, they will really become cost prohibitive for anyone to import it. And yet that has been the case.
I was happy to see at the end of the film that you had something about sustainability because that's, you know, people growing their own food. It was an interview with a woman talking about how they're growing their own food. Of course, Jamaica is famous for reggae music, and you have that. The soundtrack is really nice in your film, Life in Debt. And why don't you just talk about that yourself, Stephanie?
Well, the banana song in our film is the classic Deo, and by Harry Belafonte, a folk song from Jamaica that Harry Belafonte made popular. And the music, it's funny because people have said to me, you know, this film, you could have filmed it anywhere, because this is happening not only in Jamaica, it's happening throughout the world. You could have filmed it in Haiti and Ghana. And I'm like, yeah, it's true. And they say, but then it wouldn't have this fierce reggae soundtrack. And so the soundtrack, we have songs by Bob Marley, Peter Tosh, and upcoming fierce singers like Anthony B, Buju Banton, Sizzla, Yami Bolo, Ziggy Marley and the Melody Makers, a title song written by Muta Baruka, who also wrote the title song for my previous film, H2 Worka. And the soundtrack is actually going to be released on February 5th by Tuff Gong. And all the proceeds from the soundtrack are going to go to a nonprofit organization called Urge, which was started by Ziggy Marley and the Melody Makers, and they do really good work, not only in Jamaica, but the work that they do in Jamaica I'm most familiar with, which was helping homeless children get schooling, helping environmental issues be brought to the forefront, putting toilets in ghetto communities. So I'm really excited that all the musicians have come together and the soundtrack is going to be released for a really good cause.
Mm-hmm. That's terrific. And you're here in the San Francisco Bay Area for a really good cause, too. Besides the good cause of your film, you're also doing a benefit with Global Exchange, which does really good work in many, many ways. So it's really good that we get together with all our good causes, because enough things are happening. I must say, I was also struck with the pictures of Kingston, and just, you know, since I've been there, well, I guess I was there about 5 years ago was the last time, and it just is getting really worse and worse in that. But just those pictures from the film are coming into my mind and in my memories of all the people I know that go places, and it's just kind of sickening, actually. I guess it's not their fault, but...
Yeah, it's funny because the tourists, a lot of people say that I'm really poking fun of them, and I'm really not. We filmed them in a kind of anthropological way, very distant. I didn't really speak with them. We just filmed the activities, and actually the worst footage we left for the cutting room floor, because really some zany, crazy stuff does go on in these kind of all-inclusive hotels in Jamaica. But I do want to say this. Jamaica is an amazing place to visit, and I hope that no one would walk away from the film thinking that I would not encourage. I encourage every person I know to go and visit Jamaica. I could say personally has saved my life. Knowing that country, it's one of the most beautiful, beautiful places on many, many levels that I've ever been. And I'm grateful that somehow my life has led me to be able to make a second home there and the home of choice as opposed to the home I was given when I was born. But the tourists in the film really were a metaphor, as I said, for a kind of victimization in lack of knowledge, which is very much how these things all seem to occur, you know, and the film is really an attempt to kind of create a public watchdog, and by making more transparent the policies and the fact that the IMF and the World Bank are purporting to reduce poverty but have not achieved it to any degree, and they've been in existence for over 50 years, to try to make that transparent and yet to include what is our role in this. And that's really what the use of the tourists were. And so in filming, you know, the beer drinking contest and crab race and all these kind of silly things, they were, I was really trying to use them in a, I would say, in a artistic way, not literally. I wasn't really trying to use it literally, for example. It was, and that's why they always have the voiceover and they don't really speak. They're just kind of symbolic of a victimization that I think that we need to fight against.
Yeah, well, I'm glad I said it's not really their fault, because a lot of times I get very upset about it, and it's such a bind for countries that so much of the economy is based on tourism. I know somebody that I interviewed from Hawaii said, you know, if you want to do us a favor, don't come. Don't come, because tourism has so ruined the culture and the environment. And I guess they're not saying that in Jamaica, like you just said. It is kind of to go places, and it's good to visit other countries and to be broadened and learn and relax. So it is kind of a bind. So are you planning to do any other film work in Jamaica? Do you have a next project?
Since that film, I did a small, just a little music piece for Damian Marley and EPK. So I really enjoy working with reggae musicians. And the project I'm just embarking on is very different. It's a documentary of an artist, of a female artist, a very personal documentary, just following her creativity and her spiritual pursuits. Mm-hmm. So the challenge of life and death was really making a subject matter that's invisible. I mean, the impact of policies is not a very clear visual subject. There's no specific place. There's no specific event. And so that was really a challenge to put all the pieces together. And so I'm excited about this project, which is a little bit easier in that, you know, it's based on a single person, an individual.
Yeah, well, you did a great job in terms of the visuals and really educating people, because it is a very complicated thing to understand about the debt. And the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank and the, what's that,
American Development Bank.
American Development Bank. And it's just such a crucial dynamic in the world, and most people are kind of, you know, it's like too hard. So this, watching this film, Life and Debt, is a really good way to get a more kind of concrete feel for what's going on. And also, and you had Michael Manley, the former prime minister, several times the prime minister of Jamaica, and he's such a great guy, and he's talking about how sorry he is that he made the decisions he made, although countries are kind of, it's another bind. What are they going to do a lot of times? It's just really difficult. Sam, what are your plans for distribution of this film, Life and Debt, and is it going to be coming to everybody's neighborhood theater here in Berkeley? It's in a mainstream major theater right in central Berkeley, which is great to see.
Which is mostly the result of my amazing distributor, New Yorker Films, and they've been distributing the film theatrically. And we have a website, www.lifeanddebt.org, which lists where the film is coming to.
Okay, well, I'm going to keep talking while Stephanie coughs here. So it's very hard to be talking, and and to have a cough.
This is not my natural speaking voice, no, but anyway, so it go.
So that webpage, www.lifeanddebt.org, which says it's not going to make a lot, you know, you're not, your main thing isn't to make a fortune. It's hard to make a fortune on documentaries in any case. But just to give an idea, do you have future bookings?
Sure. Yeah. The film is opening in San Francisco here tomorrow, January 18th. It's opening in Miami and Los Angeles on February 8th. It's opening in Sarasota on February 8th. It's opening in San Diego on February 15th. It's coming to Houston, Texas. It's coming to Baltimore. There's about 20 upcoming dates in different cities. It's coming back to New York at BAM on February 8th. So if people check the site again, www.lifeanddebt.org, lifeanddebt.org, then we always update all the upcoming theatrical screenings.
Okay, well, that's good. It sounds like they can also check their newspaper in those places and think it's going to come up. Have you shown the film in Jamaica?
Yeah, that was great. We showed the film in Jamaica, and we invited all the people, the farmers and such, and then it played in the movie theater for about 3 weeks there, and it sold out every night, and that was great. And it really created a lot of discourse and discussion, especially among the young people, and that really touched me because there's a new generation that really wants to work hard to fix things in their country, and they really connected with the film, and that really moved me.
Yeah, I bet it did. Those are the good rewards. So Stephanie Black, the producer-director of Life and Debt, is there anything else you'd like to say in closing?
No, just thank you for sharing your time with me, and I hope that people will come out and see the film. And what everyone always says to me that I'm supposed to tell people is that it's entertaining, even though it has a lot of factual information. It's an easy watch, and it's an entertaining film, so...
I'll vouch for that, definitely. I just watched it last night, and I didn't want to miss a second. I was seeing it on video, and I didn't want to, like, run off and make some tea because I didn't want to miss anything. It's definitely a very, very beautiful film. So I urge people to see it. And what would you say about going to Jamaica as a tourist, just real quick? You know, anything that you want to, like, urge people to do or not do?
Go. I wish I was going today. There's a beautiful areas, the South Coast. There's many areas to explore off the beaten track. Portland is a beautiful area. The Blue Mountains are a beautiful area. The South Coast, Treasure Beach is a beautiful area. So there are a lot of places to go to in Jamaica if you don't want to go the traditional all-inclusive. But sometimes the all-inclusives are nice, too, for a bit of, you know, have everything taken care of for you.
And do you think there's any hope for change? Is there much of a protest movement, or do you think it's possible to get out of this situation in Jamaica, or the debt is just too imprisoning?
Well, we end the film on a hope beat. The final three scenes are all a full hopeful ending, and so yeah, I think Jamaicans are survivors. They're incredibly resourceful and they're incredibly ingenious, and I think that things have reached such a boiling point that it can only get better.
Okay, well, again, thank you, Stephanie Black, a producer and director of Life and Debt, and my name's Sue Cipriano. Thanks for listening.